Rebellion.
In Your Face, joined by Madison Moffat, who presents Queering the Air on Sundays. Madison, welcome back.
Yeah, thanks. Welcome to the Madison segment of In Your Face.
It is always great to see you. It's been a wild day at 3CR because, of course,
completely,
we're gearing up to the 50th birthday celebration on the 4th of July. We've got Radiothon in June, and you have been going through archives.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so there's just so much history around, queer identity and the extent to which 3CR is a community radio station, recognising that those voices have been marginalised, doing their best to platform them. And so what I've been doing is I've been going through all sorts of reel-to-reels and, DAT, remember DAT cassettes? There's DAT cassettes and the like. And, from some of the oldest sound hardware you've seen in your life, we're going to extract and digitise some of that really exciting material from our past.
What is the most exciting find that you have discovered?
Well, I'm going to be perverse here because in my own little sick perverse way, I like following the people who I dislike the most. So I couldn't believe it when I found a recording of an interview that was done by Women on Women. And they were just, interviewing a radical feminist from their perspective, right? But this is the person, name escapes me, funnily enough.
Oh, don't name them.
No. who they're famous, really, in a way, who wrote, the Transsexual Empire, that basically the book that claims that, being transgender and being a transgender woman is a way for men to invade women's spaces. This is the TERF Bible, the writer of the TERF Bible. And I've got two tapes of, say, about a 1 hour interview of this person. And, it's just call me sick, but I can't wait to listen to it. It's in a perverse way.
What year are we talking?
Well, that's basically like in the late 70s, that one. Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, well, actually, the book was released, I believe, in 79. I can be corrected there, of course. And I believe it was about three, 4 years after that when they released their second book. But I have no doubt, given the nature of interviews, I know that I would be asking about her first book if I was interviewing about the second, so I can't wait.
What else have you discovered?
Yeah, some really interesting material around a focus on, in a way that I am quite sure that the mainstream media at the time simply were not doing, on the HIV and AIDS epidemic. On so many different angles, highlighting, the great work that was being done by a range of people, queer of people of all colours and stripes, helping out in community, trying to raise awareness as to how this thing is spread. There's shows where people are trying to share the very latest news about, an epidemic of which they were still learning about. And yeah, you can really get a sense of the need to spread as much of the latest information as possible to minimise what was an exceedingly scary time.
Absolutely. And 3CR was at the forefront of that with, you know, people living with HIV actually being on the airwaves and talking about their experiences at a time where there was no queer media, there was no Joy FM.
No.
It was 3CR that was the conduit and the platform for so many people to give life-saving information to the community.
Indeed. And even though there were one or two queer programs at the time, what strikes me is the number of programs that weren't necessarily queer at all in their remit, who on the other hand considered not only reporting on the HIV epidemic, but also reporting once again from the perspective of those on the front line about what, in a community sense, we were trying to do to alleviate what was going on. So, we're not just, there was only so many queer shows out there, but in terms of community radio, that does appear to have been a lot of that weight was still carried by either people who are running non-queer current affairs programs, but they themselves were queer, or, on the other hand, very strong queer allies.
Wow, you must have really kind of felt like you were back in another era when you were going through these tapes and listening to some of them.
Yes, well, you see, the interesting thing for me is that back then I was, about 14. you know, when 15, when the Grim Reaper ads came on. And that was my exposure. My exposure was this scary ad, and, you know, and everything everything at school was about, you know, ha ha, you have AIDS, as if that's like a slur. And that was basically the extent of my familiarization with it. And in part, I think, because, you know, I was a juvenile surrounded by juveniles with, unfortunately, not particularly well-informed, well-informed adults around me. But to instead be immersed in this community, you know, and the communications that they were sending out, where, you know, to the extent that they weren't informed, they recognized the gaps of the information and were desperately seeking the answers. It's a very, very different perspective to what I experienced as an adolescent, you know, in suburban New South Wales.
When you go through this material and you kind of think of the present,
yes.
What's the biggest example of the more the times change, the more they stay the same? Has there been that at all?
Well, I think, unfortunately, and I'm going to be discussing how to best tactfully address this, but unfortunately, it has actually struck both myself and a number of queer people who are gathering information from various sources for this project. The extent to which early on... shows and projects that would platform gay people may, on the other hand, be, particularly by today's standards, quite transphobic, you know? And so it seems to be that, unfortunately, we go through cycles in this regard. Just when we think that, you know, the LGBTIQA plus community is genuinely including the Q, genuinely including the T, you end up with these forces that sort of bubble up again, you know? What's old is new again with this, like, LGB without the T nonsense.
So yeah. You're kind of sensing, I guess, you know, tension and friction between the different bits of the alphabet, or it's deeper than that?
Well, I think to begin with, I think it was almost, to be frank, at least it comes across to me listening to this material, it comes across to me as in the L and G were just as ignorant about the T as anyone else. You know, and it doesn't seem to me that, or perhaps in certain parts of the LNG community, there wasn't much familiarization with trans people within the community. And that just shows, you know. And then there's outright transphobic notions about, you know, intersections within feminism and how the introduction of trans people into those academic and social spaces is eroding the meaning of what it is to be both a woman and a feminist. So, yeah, but then also you do also see examples of other shows who are saying the direct opposite, you know, so, and where they're talking in terms of, they're speaking with academics. We seem to, at 3CR at that particular point in time, focus quite a bit on talking with European and American academics who were at the forefront of gender studies at the time. And so, therefore, those shows in particular tend to be not just more inclusive, but actually challenging the exclusion. So there's this dynamic critique going on where, you know, there's a struggle between various parties to define what feminism means, and therefore what does a women's space mean, and what does womanhood mean? It's interesting.
Wow. So you're really seeing the change, if you like, insofar as the lens that which feminism is viewed now, yes, compared to the late 1970s.
Yes. But on the other hand, it is also sometimes a situation where you do feel that, you know, what's old is new again. You know, so I think that I suppose what comes across strongly for me is that the very nature of backlash is an attempt to bring back what has previously tried to be defended but failed. So they're at, you know, it's like a repeat of previously failed arguments.
It must be a real window into how activism was done in the pre-digital world, the pre-online world.
Yes.
What's jumping out at you in relation to that?
I suppose there seemed to be less of an expectation that public institutions will help. You know, I get this sense when I listen to this material that no one seriously believed that the government is going to help queer people, and that the only way that, you know, assistance is going to be on board at, on, you know, on the ground is if it's done by us, for us. I think there's a bit of a different dynamic now where there's suspicion where with regards to government and what they intend in terms of future funding. But nonetheless, the expectation is that we will be funded. And it's a different shift.
Wow. So you're actually looking into an era where there wasn't government capture of queer activism and queer institutions, if you like. It was pre-queer institutions.
Well, pre-formal state and quasi-state queer institutions, but without the groundswell of, you know, grassroots queer groups that ran themselves like institutions. I mean, yeah, historically, I mean, there's even a show on the ABC recent, a couple of years ago about it. There was an enormous surprise on the part of the gay community that it appeared that, in fact, the federal government wanted to respond to the AIDS epidemic to an extent through community engagement. And, you know, historically, we know that that was not wholly trusted amongst the queer community. And I think it seems to me that a lot of what I'm listening to is the historical context of that suspicion.
Absolutely. And that was a really groundbreaking thing to actually fund a community to do community health. Yep. You're actually listening to audio where it's the infancy of that, or even, you know, before it actually happened.
Yeah, where these organisations, on the other hand, while being grassroots, are starting to engage where they can and where it's fruitful and beneficial, larger entities or entities with a greater platform. And I think this is where 3CR came in at the time. 3CR was able to broadcast their views, you know, in an environment where we didn't have the internet, and the mainstream media was, well, you know, most of the time just took the views of the conservative right, you know, in these areas.
So you're really looking in on a period where there was grassroots direct action before the digital age, where people actually showed up physically and did direct action. What's your sense of all of that?
Well, I think that there is still a lot of direct action, you know, in our community at least. You know, I have a feeling that maybe other queer communities in other cities, you know, may suffer from a bit of overload when, you know, the SJWs who just post online and think the job is done. But I know that the Melbourne community is known for being somewhat more hands-on in our response to things. And a lot of our institutions, while, you know, I myself on air have occasionally criticized some of our institutions for being a little too professional. When I say professional, I mean like quasi-professional, professionalism for professionalism's sake, rather than, you know, but whereas if they were truly professional, they would be truly client-focused, you know. So I'll criticize it occasionally, and I'll continue to do so where I see it. That kind of quasi-professionalism that's getting in the way of actually delivering. But be that as it may, I think that, you know, there is still a lot of hard-working, you know, community-engaged social workers within our community across Victoria who are doing great work. But I think that perhaps the difference is that we are just a little bit tempered by the expectations of our funders, whereas, you know, the freedom, the restriction rather of not being funded was there was less you could do. The freedom of not being directly funded by the government is you could do precisely what you believe needs to be done in precisely the way you believe it needs to be done.
And say it as well, which is something that, you know, people feel constrained by now because they're funded by the people, the government.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, I get the occasional person who sort of wants to know what I'm playing at, you know.
And what do you say?
I just say, look, you know, I mean, these types of funding arrangements were born out of dynamic critique and discussion of the past. And the only way they're going to be healthily maintained is through the same mode.
Madison Moffat, who presents Queering the Air on 3CR every Sunday at 3 o'clock. It is always wonderful to see you in the studio. And you're putting together this project for our 50th celebration. Of course, we're turning 50 on the 4th of July. There is an event at the Collingwood Town Hall kicking off at 11 a.m. But you're putting this project together. How exciting.
Well, can I give a shout out that my efforts are just one small part of a whole archiving team. And it's just, I'm obsessed with my own little piece.
Madison, always great to see you in the studio.
Pleasure.
3CR. In Your Face would like to thank Thorn Harbour Health for their sponsorship of this program. Thorn Harbour Health envisions a future where our LGBTIQ plus communities and people living with HIV are healthy and live safely with dignity and well-being. To find out more, search for Thorn Harbour Health online.